Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife,
Marie.
And you are Going In Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
Yeah, welcome to Going In Raw. Raw View. Going In Raw View. It's our pay-per-view review show. We do this.
Yes, old pay-per-views.
Old pay-per-views. That's correct. And at the $10 Patreon mark, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson. And at the $10 low-level Going In Raw writer mark
yes.
tier, you can vote. We throw up three options. And sadly, the Going In Raw universe did not choose Clash of the Champions 14, Dixie Dynamite. That's where the Shockmaster made his debut.
Yes, we'll do it sometime.
Instead, they went with Bash at the Beach 1994, Hulk Hogan's first WCW pay-per-view, the yes. epic matchup between him and Ric Flair.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me that that match never happened when both of them were in WWF.
It's really weird that they never took advantage of that.
The story, if I remember correctly.
Hogan.
Was that
politics and Hogan.
They were wrestling on the house shows.
Yeah, yeah.
But the attendance wasn't to Vince's liking for those shows.
Mm.
This is all from memory, so I could be completely wrong.
Well, okay, here's the thing. In this day and age...
And so WrestleMania 8, I think it was, they went with... Yeah, 8. Hogan, Sid.
Right.
And Macho Man, Flair.
Right, yeah.
Rather than having Hogan, Flair headline that WrestleMania.
Yeah, one thing that we sort of take for granted these days... is how much we know about each territory, the territories.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, a lot of people didn't. Like WWE fans, a lot of them didn't even know who Ric Flair was. And WCW, although the fans probably knew what WWF was, it didn't matter because this was going down in WWF. So when Ric Flair came to WWF, well, you know, I think it didn't get the response maybe that they thought it would because Ric Flair was an icon down south, but nobody watched that TV in the WWE, you know, nationally. So that might be one reason. In any event, this is Bash
well,
the
I
Beach,
think by that point.
94, Larson. So you know what it means.
By that
it
point.
Means, that's right, brother.
Oh, goodness.
Josh, I thought this was my NWO shirt.
It's not.
For one thing. And number two, this is Bash 94.
Yeah, this is before. It was 2 years after this that would happen.
I really thought it was my NWO
shirt. I was going to say, I believe WCW had it was on national TV on TBS at the time.
Cable? Nobody had cable back then.
That's what WWF was on for the most part.
Nah, man.
Yeah.
They had, when was this?
94.
90,
Raw.
Oh, 94?
Yeah, it was Raw.
Oh, no. I'm talking about when Flair went to WWF.
Oh, that's 92.
Yeah.
91, 92.
Nobody had cable.
Yeah, there. WCW was on cable, and so was WWF.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. I still think my point is actually pretty solid, though.
I'm not saying I was watching. Don't have a point.
I was watching that Chris Hero interview I was telling you about.
Yeah,
it was on Sam Roberts' podcast.
Yeah,
and the reason why I even brought that up is because he brought up on that because they went into a tangent, and he was like, "Yeah, when I was growing up watching WWF, I had no idea who Ric Flair was.
I had no idea either."
And then he showed up with that big gold belt, and I was like, "Why does he have that? What is that? You know?" So I mean, that could be one thing. It's easy. My point is, it's easy now.
Yes.
Be like, why didn't they do that? That's a license print money. Maybe not. Maybe they didn't think that back then. So anyways. But yeah, so oddly enough, the first place we got to see that epic matchup, something WCW did right was
yes.
apparently at Ric Flair's sort of at his suggestion, he convinced Eric Bischoff to sign Hulk Hogan, who had left WWF. Kind of like not really. I mean, he literally left on top. He King of the Ring 93. He was champion. He lost it to Yokozuna.
Yes. That was his last televised WWF match. He still did house shows till August of that year.
Regardless of the fact that he was champion, though, or in spite of the fact that he was champion, people were over Hogan by that time.
The attendance for King of the Ring 93 was
6,000?
About 6,500.
Mm-hmm. So people were over Hogan at that point. He took a year off essentially to do Thunder in Paradise, a TV show, and that was shot the same place there in Universal in Orlando, I think, where WCW was filmed. And so, you know, he went over there and, you know, they probably offered him, they offered him a ton of money.
Yes.
Apparently WWF had the right to match it.
Oh, yeah.
And they opted not to, probably because A, it's so much, and B, why would they?
I know.
They had moved on to their new generation. And yeah, he ended up in, they had like a big weird parade for Hogan when
at
he came
Disney
in.
Disney World, wasn't it?
Disney World.
Yeah.
And so it ended up his first pay-per-view match, Bash at the Beach. I'll say this, like, you know, when Tony Schiavone would say, you know, biggest match in the history of our sport, the case could be made at that point. The case could be made. Hogan versus Flair, the two biggest names of that generation mm-hmm. in those respective companies mm-hmm. came together for the first time
Never
on
had
TV.
Had a televised match.
Yeah. So odd that like WWF didn't just stop for like 3 months to put it on TV.
I know.
See how it would work out. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Because regardless of how the house show attendance was, you'd think maybe there'd be some people who were hardcore Ric Flair fans that would just
right.
tune in to watch him wrestle Hulk Hogan, who was, you know, the most well-known wrestler in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's odd.
Yeah, it's strange.
I had other notes. That's weird. I know I put down other notes somewhere. I'm not lying when I say I have notes all over the place.
Yes.
Because I really do. But I had notes because I just noticed that you said Darren Norwood here. So kick off the show for us.
Sure. So they had an opening video package hyping up the main event.
Yeah.
You know, saying once again, the greatest match in wrestling history. After that, we go to Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Gene Okerlund.
Nice.
Who are introducing the show. They talk for a bit.
Yeah.
Again, hyping up the card.
At what point did Schiavone say, wrestling is cool again?
Because
he said that. It was super cheesy.
It was in the intro, yeah.
Yeah.
And then from there, they went to the ring, and Darren Norwood sang the national anthem. I have no idea who Darren Norwood
is. I had some specific notes about Darren Norwood.
Oh, really?
I did. Like, these are all my WGPW notes.
They're all,
so maybe.
You didn't name
all,
any of those documents.
Mess. Oh, here we go. Nice. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah, we're going to talk about that today. Number one, he's wearing a U.S. flag shirt. That was amazing and very 1994. Darren Norwood, however, never cracked the top 10 in the U.S. country charts. Highest he ever charted was number 12 in the singles country charts.
What songs was he known for?
None. He wasn't known for anything.
Well, I mean,
I have no idea. I didn't write down those notes. I wrote one line about him. Never cracked top 10 U.S. country charts.
Now I'm curious.
Yeah. It's all a bunch of very generic. That was sort of the thing. Like, I did read, like, the synopsis of his reviews for like his first album.
Yes.
And it was like, yeah, it just sounds like every other cowboy song.
I've never heard any of these songs.
See, what I tell you, okay, there's one called If It Wasn't For Her, I Wouldn't Have You.
And that peaked at 26 on the U.S. country charts.
Is he talking about a mom and a daughter? Or is he talking about...
No
I don't
idea.
Know what he'd be talking about there.
His highest charting...
Like a mutual friend?
I don't know. His highest charting song was Cowboys Don't Cry, 24.
24?
And that was in 1994.
Oh, I was looking at the Canada country. He went to number 12 in Canada. They like country music in Canada?
I guess so.
A little weird.
So this must have been his hot song.
Cowboys Don't Cry.
This got him the spot, I'm guessing, on singing national anthem at Bash at the Beach.
I like his 1995 hit, which reached number 50. Bad Dog, No Biscuit.
Yeah.
You think he was just like sitting around? He's like, man, I need a new song. Bad Dog, No Biscuit.
Oh, could perfect. Be.
Number one hit.
Could
be. Number 50. Idiot. Anyways, next
so
up.
So back to Tony, Bobby, and Gene. And they recap what happened on the previous episode of WCW Saturday Night leading up to the main event.
Can I just say
something?
Leads
into the next match. What?
We really take for granted the wonderful video recaps that WWE produces. Because these were just, it was just like a random series of clips from previous episodes sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I think, the Dustin Runnels,
yes.
Terry Funk stuff was thoroughly confusing.
Yeah.
No idea what was happening in those clips. It was, and there was like blood everywhere. It was a mess.
Yeah, there's a lot of blood.
Anyways, this was a little bit more just...
That's because it was one show.
Right. Yeah, it took place in one show.
The scenario is Sting has Flair in the Scorpion Deathlock. Out comes a guy.
Yeah. Yeah, like the little person. Not literally a little person, but like a person of limited stature, I guess.
Okay.
Not stature. What am I thinking of? A shorter person.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Sherry Martel. It was Sherry.
Well, I was going to get to that. The reveal didn't happen until later on. Come on. So, Sherry.
Well, help me out then. Sit there looking at me like an idiot.
I was waiting to see where you're going. Sherry, who is disguised as a dude.
Right. So it was a chick dressed up like a guy. It was a smaller person.
Yeah. Attacks Sting.
Wasn't a hoss out there.
Flair and the Scorpion Deathlock.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an altercation during which Sting is injured.
Hold on a second.
What?
Sting was injured for Bash of the Beach. That's why he
wasn't
there.
Was supposed to take on Lord Steven Regal for the TV title.
Oh, right.
But because of this, he couldn't.
Because of that, we get to talk about Johnny B. Badd and the implications therein. Continue so I can get to this.
So anyways, Hogan comes out, takes the wig off Sherry. He realizes it's not a dude. It's Sherry Martel.
Here's the thing, though. It takes Hogan forever and a day to figure out that this is somebody under a disguise, and he doesn't understand it until he literally grabs the person by the head and then tries to bring them over for violence. But instead, he just gets a handful of hair.
Yes, wig.
A wig, and then you see Sherry Martel, and Hogan still can't put it together.
And then Sherry takes the mustache off or whatever.
She takes the fake goatee off, and several seconds after that, he realizes...
But at that point, Flair attacks.
Right.
Chop block to the knee.
Yeah. Hogan goes down. He's still probably confused as to who Sherry Martel is.
He probably still hulked up and eventually got the upper hand.
Right, exactly. So anyways, that led to Johnny B. Badd versus Lord Steven Regal. Now, number one, Steven Regal is like the coolest ever.
Yeah.
William Regal is the man.
Yeah. I forget how good of a wrestler he was.
Oh my gosh, I know. It was like watching and you can see the Tyler Bate Pete Dunne stuff that we get to witness today. You can see that in William Regal back then.
You definitely could.
All right, Larson. Let's talk about Johnny B. Badd.
All right.
Okay. Oh man. So was he supposed to be a black guy? Mark Marrow, we did a little bit of research on this, and all we really came up with is a shoot interview with Barry Windham,
mm-hmm.
Where he said, and it's so funny that, so we're obviously like, you want to dance around this. You want to dance around this because it's a little bizarre, to say the least. And even in this shoot interview with Barry Windham, I get the feeling they want to dance around it a little bit because it's weird. I don't know what ethnicities Mark Merrow might have, who his parents are. I don't think he's an African-American male. I'm almost positive he's not. Doesn't look like it. Barry Windham in his shoot interview said, yeah, Dusty wanted him to, how did he put it? Dress and act like an African American. He's named Johnny B. Badd, which is obviously a riff on Johnny B. Good,
mm-hmm. The Chuck Berry song.
He acts and has the outward appearance of Little Richard. And I'll say this for Mark Merrow, he does a dead on Little Richard impression. His Little Richard impression is really, really good. But this is like cultural appropriation to the max. Because I'm pretty sure Mark Merrow is not a black man. And he's doing everything to make us feel like he is. It's really weird. I'm going to quote this website that I found. And I'm going to source it. We'll source it in the notes. Or in the description, rather. Because they tackle it less clumsily than I'm going to. He said, and this is about the times in wrestling where there were some perhaps inappropriate racial overtones going on. And they addressed Johnny B. Bad. He says, this is another tough call, since I'm not certain that WCW technically ever presented Mark Merrow as African-American per se. However, since he was imitating a black man, Little Richard, his character name referenced a black man's song, Chuck Berry's Johnny B. Good, and perhaps the clincher, Theodore Long managed him, I'm erring on the side of inclusion based on the totality of the circumstances. I'm still quoting here. It's hard to imagine a major pro wrestling organization attempting a gimmick like this today. That's not because of the potential offensiveness of the character to multiple groups. Wrestling has never cared much about that, which is true. Rather, it seems very unlikely that today's wrestling industry would build a gimmick around musicians who peaked in popularity 3 decades before the debut of the wrestler in question. The closest thing I can recall in recent history was the ill-fated Kiss Demon gimmick during the final days of WCW. But that's a tangent. The point here is that Johnny B. Badd was probably African-American. Mark Merrow is not. So the whole thing was just unsettling. Can you just admit it's
yeah.
It's unsettling
yeah.
to watch him do a little. I mean, it's weird.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there doesn't seem to be like an official record. I haven't found anything where Dusty says, oh, yeah, Johnny B. Badd. That was all me, baby. I thought it was a great idea. Let's just say it wasn't a great idea. Mark Merrow, however, was a decent wrestler.
Yeah, he was. I don't remember him being that athletic.
He was athletic. Yeah, he was an athletic
guy. I mean, I don't remember much from his stint as Wild Man Mark Merrow in WWF.
Mm-hmm.
But when he had that boxing gimmick,
mm-hmm.
Kind of in the early part of the Attitude
Era. He was like
a
Golden Gloves guy.
Yeah, he was. He was a legit boxer. Mm-hmm. And they mentioned that during this match.
Yeah.
He didn't really do some of the stuff that apparently he could do in the ring. I mean, he wasn't a great wrestler.
He was very athletic, though.
But he was athletic, yeah.
Yeah.
Steven Regal, great wrestler.
Great wrestler, yeah. Yeah, and he would do, like, all the charisma in the world. Love Regal.
Yeah, Regal's great.
This match was what it was. It was for the TV title. What is this? Johnny B. Badd can shoot fireworks from his hands?
He had these little, you know what you'd call them. They were handheld fireworks shooters.
Oh, really?
You didn't notice that during his intro?
Oh, no, I do remember. Boy, yeah, no, I do remember that. Oh, yeah, that was kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, I kind of like that. And then, did you ever find it? Sir William.
I don't know who that is.
I looked it up, and it was like something Dundee. Yeah, I know, WCW. It was Bill Dundee.
Oh, okay. I know that name.
Yeah, so I kind of know that name. But yeah, anyways, I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to remember the sequence of events for the end of the match. Johnny B. Badd, Mark Merrow gets Regal in a pinning situation. Sir William hands Regal his umbrella.
Yeah.
To help him not be pinned. Oh, no, sorry. It was the other way around.
Okay.
Regal held onto the umbrella to get more leverage for the pin. The ref kicked it out. Roll up, and I think another roll up.
Mm-hmm.
And then Regal gets the win. And then Merrow gives Sir William a back body drop after the match.
Yeah. What do you think about those stairs that were like.
That was a weird place to put them.
They didn't have corner stairs. They had like one like facing the ramp.
Yeah.
From the ramp to stairs that go up the ring.
And it came into play during another match.
Kind of to comedic effect if you're thinking about the same one.
Yes.
Then they gave Antonio Inoki a plaque. I just feel like sometimes WCW tried too hard to be something special.
I feel like they tried to offer something for everyone because they would, for Halloween Havoc 92, they had Bruno there. Even though, as far as I know, he had no history with WCW or the NWA.
No, he didn't.
You know, certainly not to the degree he had with WWF.
Right.
And later on, we found out that Nick Bockwinkle was the commissioner of WCW. He was a huge star in AWA. So it felt like a lot of times they were saying, okay, let's bring in wrestling legends, bring him onto our show, have him be a part of our show, and we'll get a pop for that.
Yeah. It was just weird. I did like that William Regal got back in the ring while they were giving Antonio Inoki a plaque,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to throw.
Yeah, no, that was great. Took his suit jacket off.
Yeah.
He was ready to go.
That was good. So anyways, yeah, Regal interrupted that. I like that Regal was also like, I just came back from Japan, and I took on some of the best competitors over there. This man is no match for me.
Yeah.
It was great.
That's pretty good.
Love Regal.
And so Heenan, who was doing commentary.
Heenan seemed like he didn't want to be there.
Very much so.
He seemed like legit grumpy.
Yeah.
Like he didn't like, there's heel Heenan, which is great. But then there's like grumpy Heenan, and it's just kind of off-putting a little bit. Did he phone it in that much? I don't want to say he phoned it in. He just seemed grumpy. He didn't seem that grumpy during like the heyday of Nitro, did he?
No.
He was funny. He was like,
yeah.
He was clever and stuff.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, I know. It was strange. So Jesse the Body Ventura joins Tony Schiavone.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
For the kind of, I think for more or less the rest of the card till the main event.
I totally forgot that he was there. And then, yeah, and then he was gone. That was weird. What was that all about?
I don't know.
And what was Ventura doing at the time? Because he was already...
At Halloween Havoc Night 2, he was talking about how he was mayor.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Because he was already... He already looked like Governor Ventura. And Schiavone said something along the lines of your honor or your whatever.
Yeah.
When you call somebody who's mayor.
Mayor.
That could be. That's rad that he still would go to WCW and do that stuff. Cause I think like I was enjoying it much more when it was Ventura and Tony.
Oh yeah.
Than when it was Heenan. Heenan just was like, seemed angry all the time.
He was the mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota from 91 to 95.
Okay. So he was thoroughly mayor still.
Yeah.
Good. You know why? Yeah. I don't, cause I got elected. Next up we had Vader versus somebody called the Guardian Angel.
His boss man.
This is actually just Big Boss Man.
But he wasn't Big Boss Man.
Right.
He was Guardian Angel.
Well, Boss Man was a character owned by WWF.
I know, but when Boss Man went to WCW, he tried to be the boss. WWF said,
oh, no. That's the story there.
Yes, and so he...
Really? The boss? Is that similar to Boss Man?
I think he
Man?
Dressed in similar attire, too.
No figures.
And so they repackaged him
He should have been like Bose Man.
And like a salesperson for Bose headphones, yes?
Exactly. Yeah.
Gotcha. And so they repackaged him
Manly
as the,
boss.
The Guardian Angel.
Yeah.
I did a little looking into it. The Guardian Angels were like a citizen police.
Oh, yeah, I remember them.
Volunteer citizen police organization.
They were featured in an episode of, what was the predecessor to NYPD Blue?
Oh,
Hill Street Blues. Yeah, that's right. I think they're in an episode of that.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then they were like on a Geraldo, I think. They made the TV talk show rounds in the 80s.
Yeah.
I remember that. And they'd have like on Geraldo, the Guardian Angels and, you know, like the Crips on like the same set. And then like hopefully, you know, fireworks would fly. I might be making that up. I just seem to remember all sorts of weird shit like that when I was a kid.
Yeah. So apparently Boss Man had to go through Guardian Angel training.
What in the hell? Didn't they just walk around the park with sticks?
I don't know what their
baseball
training entails.
Baseball bats
I don't and know
like
what their
red
training
jackets.
Entails. I don't know what it entails.
What
man.
The hell was their training?
I don't know.
He didn't look more fit than he usually did.
Well, he looked as fit as he ever did.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
So, Guardian Angel, Boss Man,
yeah,
is taking on Vader,
Man of Boss.
Yes.
I'm never gonna not want to watch a Vader match, though.
I know.
I love his matches. God, yeah. I love his matches so much.
It was kind of interesting when Boss Man no sold a Vader bomb and a moonsault from Vader, and just got right back up.
He just, Boss Man never seemed like he was in trouble through this match.
No.
That was great. And Harley, what is with Harley Race taking these nasty bumps when he's so old?
I don't know.
Like, he took a top rope, you know, Bozeman threw him off the freaking top rope.
At least.
Or the top turnbuckle.
At least in 94, they had the pads back on the floor.
That's a good point.
So there's a shoulder tackle, I think, from Boss Man.
Mm-hmm.
Ref bump.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harley Race hands Vader, like, a telescoping baton.
Yeah.
And there's a scrum. Boss Man gets a hold of the baton.
He's about to whoop Vader with it.
The ref comes to, sees that Boss Man is holding the baton, DQs Boss Man, Vader wins.
Good job.
Next, apparently before the show starts, they let some random people in the ring to wrestle.
Yeah, what was that all about? That was weird. Somebody named Molly McShane versus the Sassy Boys, Ron and Ron.
No, Ron and Ron were not in the ring.
Oh.
Ron, there was a Ron in each corner.
Oh. Oh, who are the Sassy Boys?
I have no idea.
But it was a handicap match. The Sassy Boys versus Molly McShane. She won, yes. Handedly.
Yes.
Not a lot of effort there. And then Shivani thanked that crap radio station.
Near
it looked like
tell.
An empty arena match. Because they filmed it before the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But I think they filmed that like 5 hours before the
show
started.
No, there's people in
there
the
were
seats.
A couple people there.
It wasn't an empty
It was
arena.
A very, a lot of it was empty.
Yeah, it was. Near as I can tell, Ron and Ron were radio hosts.
Yeah, I got that too. But who were the Sassy Boys?
I have no idea. Hold on. Continue.
Did they have their own H title they were like putting on the line?
Maybe. Let's see what...
They're probably on still in Orlando, Ron and Ron.
Could be. Nothing on Wikipedia about Sassy Boys.
Well, I want to find out if Ron and Ron is still a thing. Oh, Ron and Ron or... Oh, radio. There we go. Radio. Tampa radio.
Oh,
Ron
Tampa
and Ron
now.
Show on Wikipedia. Original release 87 to 97. Oh, they're still on the radio now?
Are they?
I don't know.
They were mighty popular. They had live gigs that would attract crowds between 10 and 30,000.
Whoa. Man, are we in the wrong business? Can we do that?
It was a different era, man.
Two Rons fighting? Ron and Don. That's not right. Young Paul and Young Ron radio show? Ron Birch.
I don't think they're on anymore.
Oh, here. There's a Where Are You Now? Ron and Ron, where are they now? This looks like a very old website, though. Look at these great, this great font right here. Let's see here. So according to this, who knows when this was?
I feel like we're going to spend more time talking about Ron and Ron than any of the matches.
Well, I really want to know what's going on here. Ron and Lori Brown as our hosts in the morning show Thunder 103.5 in Tampa.
Currently, or as of this website's construction?
Whatever this website's construction is. Copyright 2017. How is this a website from 2017? Let's move on.
Yes, let's move on.
Anyways, what was next?
Next, we had Terry Funk and the Bunkhouse Buck versus Dustin Rhodes and Arn Anderson. You mentioned the video
package.
So
much I loved about this, including the very confusing video package. It was basically a bunch of like completely random clips. And when I say random, I don't mean they pulled random clips. I mean they literally just took random segments of a VHS tape, strung them together.
That involved all four of these people.
Yeah. Then
they tried to construct
barely.
A story.
Yeah.
But apart from Arn joining up with Dustin Rhodes, I didn't get any of it.
I'm not sure why Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck had a problem with Dustin Runnels. I know they were doing a lot of like connect the dots with Dustin Runnels and Dusty at the time. And so maybe they were just, you know, hey, we had beef with Dusty back in the day. Now we're going to mess with you.
Yeah, I got
maybe
that.
Maybe it was that. Goldust had, I mean, I know where he got his fashion sense from. He had the worst looking entrance gear I've ever seen in my life. It was like bedazzled kind of stuff. But like with the, it looked like somebody threw up all over him, like radioactive material. It was horrible. But anyways, he enlisted the aid of Arn Anderson. I don't know why Arn Anderson was a horseman. So
yeah.
You knew he was going to
How long into this whole part of the show did it take for you to realize that Arn was going to turn on him?
When he told Dustin that he would have an answer for him at Clash of the Champions. So prior to him saying yes, I was like, this is not good for Dustin Runnels.
No.
But I'll never say no to a Terry Funk match, I'll tell you what, man.
Yeah, he is one of the most entertaining sellers in the history of wrestling.
Dude, he's one of the most entertaining sellers. He's one of the most entertaining promo guys. Because I think that Terry at certain times thinks it's real. But I think that he legitimately has so much fun doing it all, which is why it's great. There are certain guys who think it's real and they act too serious about it. Brett. But Terry, I feel like he thought it was real, but he was also always having a great time.
Yeah.
It was like... With Terry Funk was just a one-man wrestling party. But it wasn't like, you know, it's not like a, you know, like a Mojo Rawley party. It's like a violent wrestling party, you know? It was amazing. Anyways, him and Bunkhouse Buck took on Dustin Rhodes and Arn Anderson.
So apparently in 1994 in WCW, it was still a DQ to throw someone over the top rope.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I wonder when they changed that rule.
I like that Bunkhouse Buck was sort of a pre-Dean Ambrose. He wrestled in jeans, but then he also had on a thermal shirt.
Did you know that he started wrestling in 1969?
That's not surprising. He looked very old. He looked supremely old. If he was...
I think he was 44 in this when this match happened.
If he was 44, then he was born in 1950. He would have been 19. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, God, he was old. Is he still alive?
I think so.
He looks like he has still a live body. Because when they're all roided out, then there's a chance they're not alive still. Oh, yeah, he's still alive. Look at that. Ring name, Jack Swagger Sr.
Oh, yeah, he was involved in the segment where he was Jack Swagger's dad.
Oh!
And apparently, what was our manager's name? Colonel Parker? That's his cousin.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
I didn't know much about 2010 Bunkhouse, so I looked into it.
Oh.
Didn't know much. So anyways, there's this great part. I don't know if you picked up on this, where Dustin Rhodes in the corner beating up Terry in Bunkhouse.
Yeah, at the same time.
And Arn's in their corner mimicking it.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's great.
It's very Costanza.
It's like... Arn Anderson had the most George Costanza body ever. Yeah,
I know you said that Michael Elgin is the
George Costanza. Oh, no. It's definitely Arn Anderson. The hairline and everything.
Everything.
But it's kind of shades of Damian Sandow, too.
Yeah.
Some of that was great. Yeah. Because he even had, like, when Costanza didn't have his shirt on, he had, like, the chest hair. He had everything. It was so Costanza.
Yeah, it really was.
The glasses, everything.
So at one point, Dustin tags in Arn. Mm-hmm. Arn's like, talking to Dustin, mm-hmm. and then just DDTs him.
DDTs the living crap out of him. Was great.
Pulls Funk over on top of Dustin for the cover, and Funk picks up the win.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Then there's an Arn Anderson interview.
Yeah, right afterwards. They try to interview him. He just says a couple things saying he's going to go back and party, and that's it.
And they did. They had a great party. We're going to talk about that in a sec.
It was awesome.
Then we had... Then they brought out Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
Where did Hank Aaron play ball?
Well, early part of his career and the very end of his career in Milwaukee, in between Atlanta.
At any point did he play in Orlando or Florida?
I'm aware of.
Right. Why?
Well, I mean, spring training maybe.
I like who doesn't like Hank Aaron?
Hank Aaron is great.
Yeah.
Hank Aaron is
awesome.
Why was
he there?
Well, they said they brought in celebrities and dignitaries. That's what they said.
That's fine. I'm just saying, like, what did, was there some sort of through line? Was it thematic? Doesn't feel like that. Did you see that Chris Kurtz guy? Did you make a note about that?
No.
It was the guy who was doing like backstage, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, with Mike Tenay.
With Mike Tenay, yeah. He was like their Todd Pettengill.
Mm-hmm.
Who's nerdier, Chris Kurtz or Todd Pettengill?
Do you know Todd Pettengill still does radio stuff?
Yeah.
He was here in Sacramento for a while.
Nice.
I think.
You're dodging my question. The answer is Todd Pettengill. Chris Kurtz looked like that dude is all business.
Yeah.
He looked like he was the real deal, getting scoops, getting them to the 1-900 number.
The hotline.
The hotline, that's right. He's feeding Mean Gene all those juicy tidbits.
Yes.
Todd Pettengill, I felt, wasn't doing... He was hanging out with a kid who won the freaking In Your House. The heck is that all about? Get out of my house, my In Your House, dude. Get out of my house.
In My House.
Get out of In My House.
Get out of In My House.
Oh,
next,
man.
We got a Ric Flair interview.
Yeah.
Don't remember much about this. I didn't make any notes about this interview.
It was
him and it was Sherry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was just very typical Ric Flair. Sherry was great, though. Sherry
was
always
great
in the mic. She was just yelling and stuff.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Ric Flair was yelling, too. He kind of only has that one volume.
Well, no, he has yell and then yell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's various volumes of yelling, but it's all pretty much yelling.
Next up, we had probably the best actual match
on
the card. I mean, honestly, Hogan and Flair put on a decent match. But this was the best wrestling match on the card.
Yes.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Well, he wasn't quite Stone Cold yet.
Stunning Steve Austin.
Getting much closer to being Stone Cold by this
point. I didn't know that Ricky the Dragon Steamboat carried on that dragon outfit back to WCW with him.
I didn't know that either.
Because in WWF, when he had that classic wrestle, this was... His career is so bizarre.
He went back and forth between WWF and WCW several times.
He was in WWF. He had his classic WrestleMania 3 show-stealing match with Macho Man. When he, apparently, according to Wikipedia, when he asked for time off to, you know, be with his child,
family.
With his family, Vince apparently wasn't huge on that. And so kind of punished him for that. He also says he thinks that he was punished by some of the guys for upstaging.
Interesting.
At WrestleMania 3. But then why wasn't Savage punished? You're not punishing me, no.
I don't know.
So anyways, he went to WCW.
Had a series of classic matches with Ric Flair.
With Ric Flair. Went back to WWF. And then was... there was another weird thing that happened there. That's when... they were just jobbing him out. When he came back... They made very, very minimum references to the fact that he was a former IC champion, that he had that classic WrestleMania match, and they just referred to him as the Dragon.
Yeah.
It wasn't, oh, Steamboat's coming back, it's the Dragon, and he had that ridiculous, goofy dragon outfit.
Yeah.
It looked like a children's costume. And then when he came back to WCW, for some reason, he still had a bunch of that mm-hmm. dragon stuff mm-hmm. on. I have no idea why.
I don't know why.
This was one of his last matches as an active pro wrestler.
Full-time wrestler?
Yeah. 94 is when he retired.
Still had it to the end.
Still a hell of a match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First thing I noticed when Austin walked out is he had a lot more swagger
mm-hmm.
than he did at Halloween Havoc 92. Yeah. It seemed in 92 he was still finding out who Stunning Steve Austin was.
Yeah.
At this point, he knew who Stunning Steve Austin was.
Absolutely.
And was... playing that character to the fullest. Doing some great heel work. His mannerisms by this point were very stone cold. How he punched, how he kicked, how he sold. All that stuff. So it's kind of interesting to seeing pretty much pre-Stone Cold.
Mm-hmm.
There's this great point in the match. There's a lot of back and forth. Austin fakes a knee injury. Gets the upper hand. Steamboat works... Austin's arm, and then Austin hits him with a low blow from, you know, kicks his leg up from behind.
Right, right.
There's that great sequence where Austin gets him up, gets Steamboat up for a tombstone, and there's like three reversals.
Yeah, oh, that was so good. Talk about core training right there, man. Oh, my gosh.
And then Steamboat eventually hits the tombstone.
Yeah.
Towards the latter half of this match, it was... awesome, because Austin tried to do everything he could to get DQ'd.
Mm-hmm,
he tried throwing Steamboat over the top rope like three times.
It's like, it's supposed to work. It's supposed to work.
I know.
No, I turned DQ off. What?
I know.
What?
And there's a spot where Steamboat goes to the top rope, and Austin tries to push the ref in front of Steamboat to take the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work, but eventually Austin won.
His feet on the ropes.
Yep, pinned Steamboat with his feet on the ropes.
So right after this, next month, Steamboat actually did win the United States Championship. But I think it was during that match, that he won.
Oh, did he get hurt?
He got hurt. They were supposed to fight at Fall Brawl, but Steamboat was unable to wrestle due to a legit back injury. Austin was given the title back. It's so crazy to read this, because like, we weren't watching WCW or WWF really at the time, and so it's hard to really get context on what Steve Austin's career was like, because we weren't really watching it at the time.
Yeah.
But man, talk about an up and coming guy.
I know.
You know, like,
well, they said during this match that he had the TV title, I think, for 18 months.
Jeez.
And then he was the U.S. champion, you know, he's a member of the Dangerous Alliance. Mm-hmm. He and Brian
tag
Pillman
champions,
had a, you know, we're in a great tag team together.
Yeah,
and then he got hurt, and then he was fired.
Yeah, so let's see here. It says his second reign of the title ended just minutes later. Oh, after he won it by forfeit, when he lost to Steamboat's replacement, Jim Duggan. Really, Hacksaw, in a match that lasted 35 seconds. He unsuccessfully challenged Duggan for the U.S. Championship at both Halloween Havoc and Clash of the Champions 19. After returning from a knee injury in early 95, Austin took part in a tournament for the vacant U.S. title, where he defeated Duggan versus Countout in the first round, but lost to Randy Savage in the quarterfinals. In 95, Austin was fired by Eric Bischoff after suffering a triceps injury while wrestling on a Japanese tour. Bischoff and WCW did not see Austin as a marketable wrestler. He was the biggest draw in history, and they didn't see him as a marketable wrestler. They couldn't market him, but Vince could.
Yes.
And he was the biggest draw in
history.
Ever.
Ever.
Yeah. So anyways, that's Stone Cold Steve.
Yes. After that, Mean Gene crashed the Stud Stables party.
Man, I've never seen old men party this hard before. there were some really good-looking women there. And Arn Anderson, who had, he had already showered and made himself look dapper again.
Yes.
Same can't be said about Terry Funk, who was still shirtless. Bunkhouse Buck had gone shirtless as well. He very sexually opened up a bottle of champagne and had it ejaculate all over the Mean Gene.
Yes. And then there's the Arn interview, and then he just had booze poured all over him the entire time.
Terry Funk at one point got on his knees and started talking to Mean Gene. That was weird.
Did you notice the PA that was on the floor by the door that had to make sure the cable didn't get tangled up for the camera?
No.
That's the first thing I noticed.
There's a I thought you were gonna tell me something interesting. You're like, that PA was Seth Rollins.
No, it was just a guy that had to kind of lay on the floor to make sure the cable.
Now I want to go back and watch it.
The cable that probably connected the camera to the production truck.
Oh my gosh.
Didn't get tangled up.
No. You gotta take care of those cables, man.
You do.
Yeah. Next up we had, I swear this match was like 30 minutes long.
It was over 20 minutes.
Pretty Wonderful, which was Paul Orndorff.
And Pretty Paul Roma.
Pretty Paul Roma. Roma's still doing good. He's running a wrestling academy.
Oh, good.
In Connecticut.
Good.
Taking
on Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan. And then, I don't know if it's really his brother, Dave Sullivan.
He looked Poe Dunk enough to be his real brother.
I know.
He didn't look Hollywood. He looked like he was somebody's actual brother.
Yeah.
He was like the Vincent to Arnold. What was Arnold's name? Was it Julius? With twins. What was Arnold's name?
That sounds right.
Oh, man. It's crazy to me that Kevin Sullivan was ever booked strong, though. Because he's like the least intimidating looking wrestler ever.
I know.
What was he, like 5'6"?
5'8".
He was 5'8". He always had a boiler. Mm-hmm. Like, he always had a gut going. And he was always balding. He never came off as a scary guy. But that's his gimmick, more often than not, was scary guy. He was the Taskmaster. Number one, from the get, change your name from Kevin Sullivan. Sullivan's a cool name. Kevin is the dude next door.
Yeah.
Kevin's that guy down the street.
Hold on. Dave Sullivan is not his brother.
Oh, my gosh. Well, who was he? Just some dude? He had some cool kayfabe corner names.
Yeah, Captain Ron.
Wait, was he the actual? He wasn't the Barbarian.
No, he wasn't.
The actual Barbarian.
No, I don't think so.
American Hawkwind? Man, where has this guy been on Kayfabe Corner? That sounds like a terrible name.
It does. Anyways, continue.
Anyways, Kevin Sullivan, I don't know. He was the Taskmaster. He was the leader of the Dungeon of Doom, which is like the last remnants of crap WCW before they went to the NWO.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then when the NWO, I think he was still head booker for like a while. Flair was head booker for this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was head booker for a while, like even getting into the NWO stuff. But maybe Bischoff took over head of creative, I don't know.
Well, then I think
there's
Sullivan,
booker, then there's head of creative.
Sullivan was still involved in booking when Nash took over.
Oh, yeah. So I think, look, I honestly think Kevin Sullivan had an amazing wrestling mind. Like I think he did a lot of cool stuff. He also did a lot of cheesy stuff, and on camera, just... He shouldn't have been on camera. He really shouldn't have been.
But he and Cactus Jack made a good team because they were both brawlers.
He was oddball, though. Too oddball. Not enough thematic.
Too oddball is not enough thematic? I mean, the theme is oddball.
Nah, man. Kevin Sullivan, he's not... They didn't fit. Cactus Jack and Terry Funk fit.
Yes, I understand.
That fits.
Obviously, that fits.
Kevin Sullivan's like that cheesy dude with like... the Dungeon of Doom weird like set with the smoke lights coming through, terrorizing Hulk Hogan, introducing the giant. That's it. Cactus Jack is Deathmatch guy.
I understand. That's that. Who I he should exactly be. I know exactly who Cactus Jack is.
I know you know who that is, which is why it surprised me you're so wrong on this point.
I'm not wrong. I'm trying to see the positives of every situation, Steve.
No, man. Yeah, this is an old pay-per-view review. We can't offend anybody.
So
here.
During this match, the crowd was so enthralled, they started doing the wave.
That's why you were so quiet during the Johnny B. Bad segment. There are no positives to be found there. Oh, man. Anyways, what'd you say?
The crowd was so into this match, they started doing the wave.
Oh, this is what I didn't get.
What?
So Pretty Wonderful went over.
Yeah.
The crowd started booing.
They were heels.
What the hell are Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan?
The opposite of heels, which are called faces. They were the face team.
Nobody cheered them. Nobody cheered them.
I thought it was pretty clear early on when Pretty Wonderful came out that they were heels.
Yeah, was it pretty clear that Kevin, like, if you, in a vacuum, if you just saw Kevin Sullivan and Cactus Jack coming out, that entrance?
Well, because...
Did they come off as faces to you?
Well, I mean, Foley did kind of the same thing, regardless of if he was heel or face.
I thought Sullivan, you know, I get that. I thought Sullivan was like perma-heel. I thought he was always
not
heel.
Not at this juncture,
who
no.
was popping for him? Who was cheering that guy? Nobody.
I don't know.
Nobody was. That's the answer.
Sullivan
nobody.
Must have, because they were tag champions.
Well, it was weird that Pretty Wonderful had a lot of heat. What did people hate about them so much? It's Orndorff. Who didn't love Mr. Wonderful?
I know. He still delivered a great pile driver.
Yeah, yeah. And Roma? I don't know anything about him.
He was a horseman for a short while.
Oh, he's that one horseman that we always forget. How can you hate that guy? How can you have any emotional reaction to Paul Roma whatsoever? How is that guy around a wrestling academy? What's he going to teach? Like, the fundamentals, probably.
How to be Pretty Wonderful, Steve. How to be,
I guess so. How to be pretty.
Yes. There's this one interesting spot in this match. I've never seen this before, where Kevin Sullivan is getting whipped into the corner, and so Foley runs into that corner and lays on top of the top turnbuckle and takes the impact so Kevin Sullivan doesn't get the impact of the turnbuckle.
Nice.
Never seen that before.
Yeah, it's very crazy.
I'm not even sure how that would work.
It's good. It's
very so they tried, the Pretty Wonderful tried to do the same thing, where Orndorff gets whipped into the corner and Roma goes on the top turnbuckle, but then whoever is whipping Orndorff reversed it back mm-hmm. to the opposite turnbuckle.
Oh, yeah.
So it's interesting. It's a spot I'd never seen before.
That is good. I saw, where did I see a, oh, yeah. No, okay, so you called the Orndorff pile driver good. I thought it was scary as shit.
Because his arm?
No, because it looked like, he number one, he got real, Paul Orndorff had some good hops.
Yeah, he always did it at that point. That's why it looked cool.
No, it looks terrifying.
It does look terrifying.
That dude was going to get his, who did he gave it to? Sullivan.
Yeah.
Man, Sullivan was going to break his neck. He's going to get his neck broke.
Didn't happen, though.
That's terrifying.
It is.
Because of his arm. What do you mean his arm?
Because, you know, he had that weightlifting accident, so his one arm wasn't...
Was that an effect already?
Yeah.
I was not paying
attention. He hurt his arm back in WWF.
I thought that was like, it wasn't really that evident. Like, once, if you look at him in like 96, I think that's when he has last match, it is so obvious.
It's pretty evident here.
It is? Okay, yeah. All right. I wasn't paying that close
attention. I think his right arm is a bit less muscular than his
left. If you look at it in 96, it's kind of disturbing how off it is. Eesh. Eesh. God damn.
That's a bummer. Did you read about what happened? He heard it lifting weights, and then he was in a money feud with Hogan. Rather than take time off and lose money, he just wrestled through it.
Oh, God. Why? Oh, man. Oh. It grosses me out when I hear about it, because that's a weird injury. That's a weird thing when one arm is way bigger than the other. That's a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it grosses me out when I... When I hear that stuff, it just grosses me out. Wrestling injuries are so gross sometimes.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the time that I think I read a piece like from superstar Billy Graham's, maybe it was his autobiography, I forget, but he was talking about when he was first doing steroids.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I would just lay in bed and feel myself grow.
Oh, yeah.
Ew.
Yeah,
feel yourself
weird.
Grow?
That's a little weird.
What in the heck is that? That is weird.
Yeah.
That's 10 times weird, man.
So the finish of this match, Paul Roma trip up Cactus Jack. Sorry, I'm trying to get us back on task here.
Somebody's arm is bigger. Yeah, that's so weird.
And he holds down his legs, and then Orndorff gets the pin.
It's like when Steiner got drop foot. What a weird injury to
that
have.
That is a weird injury. I'd never heard of that until... I heard Steiner
right?
had dropped.
Okay,
foot.
How many times have you said, I've never heard of that injury until I heard about a wrestler?
True. It's a fair point.
Exactly. Anyways, I'm sorry. Continue.
No, that was the only match.
Okay.
Next, our main event. The most spectacular, greatest match in pro wrestling history.
It's weird that people would hate Pretty Wonderful so much, but not really pop for the other team. Anyways, Hogan versus Flair, biggest match in wrestling history. They
yeah.
said it. I'm kind of on board with that at the time. It was 1994. Man, wrestling is cool. That's what Schiavone said.
I know.
That was Schiavone, the guy who gets to say what's cool or not.
I know. Shouldn't Heenan be the one saying that?
I don't think either. Heenan was cool.
But Heenan wouldn't say anything like that.
No, he wouldn't. That's why you're cool. Because you don't say what's cool.
I know.
Schiavone is not cool.
If something's cool, it's self-evident that it's cool.
Exactly.
I believe that's what you're getting at.
Absolutely.
It was in the lead up to this match that we learned that Nick Bockwinkel was now WCW commissioner. And that we learned that this match was comparable to the moon landing.
Oh, this was great. Yeah, I got notes about that.
And then also that Hulk Hogan apparently had not wrestled for 3 years.
Hold on a second. Yeah. Okay, here's – okay, okay. So, we watched the weird tag match with dude with weird arms. There was a good 20 minutes between the finish of that and the start of this next one.
Yeah,
and I'm not talking about the bell. I'm talking about
the camera was on Tony and Bobby Heenan
for
a
very long time. Let me ask you something. What are the odds that it was that extended because Hogan was still negotiating the finish of the match?
Oh, maybe
to make himself even stronger. Hey, brother. Hey, brother. Well, I got to tell you something. Not huge on this finish of the match, brother.
Well, you're going over, Hulk.
All right, brother. But here's the thing. Right now we have it. Flair puts me, brother, in the figure four, okay? I have a better idea. I put him in the figure four, brother. All right, we'll do that. Then I want to give him a big boot, brother, but I'm not going to go for leg drop, brother. I'm just going to pin him.
That just sounds like filler Hulk. It's boot, then leg drop. That's the sequence of events. And if you just do the boot with no leg drop, people are going to know you're not going to win the match because there's no leg drop.
I have another idea, brother.
Okay.
Right now, how long is my celebration scheduled for?
3 minutes.
Triple it. 9 minutes, brother.
Well, you have a one-minute interview after that, after you get backstage.
Great. 10 minutes, brother. Perfect. Is Pillman going to be there backstage with me?
Well, right now, it's just going to be you and Gene.
I like that Pillman kid. How about this, brother? Rest of the locker room back there milling about, admiring me, brother.
Fine.
Okay.
Done. I got a raise because he signed you. Fine.
I'm pretty sure that's what was happening. I can almost guarantee you Hogan was still nitpicking how strong he looked during this match.
Could be.
Oh, my gosh. Anyways, Shaq came out.
Yeah, that was cool.
Shaqton a fool. I want a burger. What is it? Shaq Pack. I need a cheeseburger. Anyways, yeah. And so, okay, let's get to Buffer. How old was Buffer here? 20 or 50? Not in between.
Somewhere in between.
How did that guy not know who Buzz Aldrin was? And what was that all about? That weird analogy? 25 years ago, man first stepped on the moon. Mere 25 miles away, these two men are fighting in the same place where Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were catapulted to the moon. Do you think Michael Buffer thought that they might have actually literally been catapulted to the moon? Because I do. That guy's worth so much money, though.
He is.
Oh, my gosh. Anyways, I don't know why they even talked about the moon landing.
I don't either.
Weird.
I don't know either.
Why was Mr. T there? It's weird that this was like less than 10 years removed from WrestleMania 1. That's weird, right?
Yeah.
Because at this point, we're what, like 40 years removed from WrestleMania 1?
I know. Well, I mean, it felt like even 94 felt like 20 years removed from WrestleMania 1.
I know it did. It was 94. And what was with Hogan's face being completely different? Have we ever discussed the possibility that Hulk Hogan was replaced by an imposter who didn't look anything like Hulk Hogan? Because take a look at a picture from Google Hulk Hogan 1985. Get a good picture of him, okay? Get a good picture of Hulk Hogan and look at Hulk Hogan in 1994. Yeah. Two different people. They looked completely different.
Well, not completely different, but different.
We did a side-by-side comparison, and you're right. There's enough similarities to debunk that theory right here and now. His nose was the same, but the lower half of his face was not. Like, from nose down, it was completely different.
He had a lot more weight on him back then.
He had weight in his face.
Well, I mean, overall.
He had 50 pounds more face.
Overall, he had more weight.
He had 50 pounds more face, Larson. What was that all about? I want to know. I've got so many questions.
Look on Wikipedia.
I'd like to ask
it. It might have
it.
Your answer, Steve.
Anyways, you know what? This is a decent match.
It was a decent match.
Flair had
Hogan,
to carry it.
Hogan did a cross arm breaker. I don't think I've ever seen him do that before.
Yeah, he was channeling his inner Alberto El Patreon.
Yeah. But it felt like a Hogan match in a loop. because there was three times, I think, when he got to the point, like he was taking punishment from Flair, got to the point where he no-sold it, did a modest Hulk out,
yeah,
was starting to do his sequence of moves, only for Flair to interrupt it.
Right, right.
That happened
right.
three times before the match ended.
Yeah.
So it really felt like three shorter Hogan matches just all mashed together into one.
Oh, that's fantastic. You're absolutely right.
But we did get to see, apart from Hogan doing a cross arm breaker, which I don't think he's ever done before, Sherry Martel
mm-hmm.
did a pretty great top rope splash onto Hogan.
Yeah, no, that was she's the best.
Yeah. She was really good.
She's the best. So yeah, we got a couple of that. Flair hit Hogan with what they said were brass knuckles, but you accurately described it as a stale donut because that's what it looked.
It did look like a stale donut, yes.
Or it looked like somebody took like a bunch of toilet paper, wadded up, and put it into a ball.
Well, then no, it was like a ring wrapped. Something wrapped in tape is what it was.
Oh, okay.
But it looked like, especially like an uncooked donut.
Yeah.
That just got stale and got hard. That's what it looked like.
It was like a donut version of hardtack.
Yeah.
Remember hardtack from the Revolutionary War?
Yeah.
Because we're that old. But anyways, didn't matter. Hogan, look, by the way, he knocked him out, or he knocked him with those brass knuckles, went immediately for the count. Hogan kicked out at
two. Of course he did.
With the brass knuckles.
Well, they weren't brass knuckles.
Well, an old donut still, same thing. Anyways, I like the various. Sherry Martel used her pantyhose for a lot.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Choked out Hogan with
them. Choked out Hogan with them, yeah.
Let me ask you this. There's a spot where both Sherry and Ric Flair are in the ring. Hogan run towards them. Sherry gets out of the way a little bit.
Yeah.
Hogan clotheslines Flair, but then it looks like he puts his other arm back to just get a piece of Sherry.
It not only does it look like he puts his arm back a little bit, he steps a little bit into it
because
he has to kind of do this. Yeah, I know. What was up with that?
What is up with that?
Making sure she doesn't interfere with his finish. It's part of what he was negotiating. Hogan, you probably shouldn't hit Sherry Martel, Sensational Sherry. You shouldn't do that. It's probably not good for the finish. Well, listen, brother. Do you want a main event or not?
He was holding the whole main event hostage over that
he
one
was.
Spot,
huh? I think he was. Anyways, Hogan, big bootleg drop, wins, and then 10 minutes of celebration. We got to see him in the hallway. We got to see him hanging out with Jim Duggan.
And Pillman. And Beefcake.
Yeah, they're all there. They're all mandated to be there by Hogan, probably. I want everybody to act like you're happy for me, brother.
Seeing Pillman the whole time was the best because he was standing right behind Mean Gene and Hogan. And for a stretch, it looked like whenever he thought the camera was on him, he would smile. But otherwise, he would just do this. So for a whole stretch, he was doing this.
Oh, it was great. He's about to throw up his lunch.
I know.
It's like I'm never going to get a whiff of that title now that Hogan's here. Back when Sullivan was eyeing it, I could have done things with it. Oh, man. So anyways, yeah, that's Bash of the Beach 94. All right, but anyways, that begs the question. Larson, what video are we going to, what pay-per-view are we going to review next?
So,
we did put three options up in front of
you. Yeah, I had the idea that since we watched a WCW pay-per-view circa 94, we should do a WWF pay-per-view from the mid-90s.
That's good. Good idea.
So your nominees this week.
Mm-hmm.
King of the Ring, 1993.
Okay. That was Hogan's final pay-per-view in the WWF before he came back in 2002.
Royal Rumble, 1994.
That was when Luger and Hart...
Both won the Rumble. And then In Your House 3, triple header
You're
from 1995.
You're obsessed with In Your House.
We're going to watch An In Your House
Is there
soon.
Something significant about
There's
this?
There's a tag team main event where all the belts are on the line.
Okay. All right. So, the winner... Four of this is In Your House 3 triple header.
You chose wisely.
All right. We recorded all three answers because we don't know the answer yet. That's why we're giggling right now.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm letting them know what the joke is. There you go. Watch that. Whichever one you just saw us say, and next week that's what we're gonna do.
No, how we should do it really is record the name and then actually do an outro after that. So you have to cut to the name and then back to us saying bye.
No! I like it this way better.
All right,
this is my show. I produce.
Fair enough.
I produce this one. Stick with the dirt sheet and count out. Anyways, that's it for now. Maybe next week we'll try it your way. I like our little end of show banter, though.
All right, whatever.
It's good. Oh, whoa. Okay. Anyways, thanks for watching. Until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.